There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. 251-343-0106. And I want to congratulate at the beginning of the hour, last hour, we awarded the grand prize in the America's 250 Summer Showcase. Laurel Booth, congratulations. Won with, I think it was week six or eight, I don't know the week, but a Facebook, patriotic Facebook photo that got the most number of likes, got her into the grand prize drawing, along with so many others. She was one that was drawn out, so congratulations to Laurel. And a reminder, too, we go, I mean, it's just like from one to the other. By the time this is ending, we've already started our college pick'em. So if you hadn't gotten signed up, remember the games get started this weekend, so you got to be in on the mix. Go to fmtalk1065.com. It doesn't cost you anything. There's no, we're not data mining you or anything, but you sign up. The clicks are there, or just email Dalton. But yeah, try it on your own before you bother Dalton. Click through. Get your little nickname or whatever on there and compete. We pick games every week against the spread, and then we talk trash for the entirety of the week, and then we pick them again and we talk trash. But y'all can win fantastic prize pack from Spring Hill Ace Hardware, so check that out as well. All right, mentioned last hour, they'd be joined by CEO at Vets Recover, Admiral Kent Davis, joining us. And you didn't plan this. You and I had talked before. First of all, welcome back in, and here we go again in Iran.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. It's great to be back with you. Boy, a lot of developments going on again.
Yeah, this is so, not just as an admiral, but a man who served in the exact place we're talking about now. Take us back to them. When was that?
Well, wow. My involvement in the Persian Gulf, Strait of Hormuz, goes back to 1987. My first deployment was aboard the battleship USS Missouri, where literally for about 5 months we escorted tankers in and out of the Strait of Hormuz.
Same place we're talking about now.
Same place. To keep the oil lines flowing during the Iran-Iraq war, similar concerns, totally different technology, different risks. I think the risks are much greater today. The uncertainty is much greater today. And then, ironically, I went back second deployment in the Persian Gulf in 1993 aboard the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln for 7 months.
Which the one that's been so much news.
The one has been in the news so much with concerns about mental health and morale and things like that. So, my gosh, sense of deja vu every time I turn on the news.
Talk about war strategy and all that, but more importantly right now, think about where you are having served there and being CEO at Vets Recover. What do you think's going on? First of all, I remember growing up, Dad always used to tell me, boy, aircraft carriers are floating cities. There's a lot of people on them.
They are.
Yeah, Dad had done some military contractors. Like, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, they're
incredible. You think about the technology. First of all, you have an airport floating on top of two nuclear reactors, literally.
Right.
With 5,000.
That's a good way to put it. I'm going to start using that. So, by the way, you know, what this is you got two nuclear reactors and an airport on top. I love that.
Absolutely. And 4.5 acres of sovereign territory floating around with 80 to 100 aircraft on board. Yeah, they are floating cities with a lot of sailors and Marines on board. They are a deployable expeditionary force when there's trouble in the world. But it's funny what's going on right now. My two worlds have kind of merged.
Yeah.
I look at my past deployments and I say, well, a 7 month deployment is not that unusual in the military.
Yeah. For people who hadn't framed this, that, you know, the mental health issues we're talking about with folks on the Abraham Lincoln, somewhere in the first couple sentences of the news story, I'll say the Abraham Lincoln, USS Abraham Lincoln, that's been on deployment for 7 months.
Yeah.
Right, so they're talking about the duration of it. Let's talk. Is that a? I don't know.
That's not unusual. In 1993, I did a 7-month deployment aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln.
That's not unusual.
Not unusual at all. Now, standard is about 6 months.
Okay, that's what's normal.
Yeah, but if there's a contingency operation, carriers have gone out for much longer than that.
So when we read 7 months, that's not some crazy number that nobody's ever heard before.
Not. Okay, no. In fact, we got extended on my deployment because the Black Hawk Down incident occurred in Somalia. We got sent down to Somalia for a month. So we got extended. Now, we didn't have people, I know this sounds cold, we didn't have people jumping overboard. And
but that's what's happened here, right? You read these stories.
It's weird. I read the stories and my two worlds have merged because I've been there. But yet I have empathy for mental health issues. And I wonder what's going on now. Is it a generational thing that perhaps just younger sailors today are reacting differently from when I was over there in 1993? Are the pressures getting to them? I wish I knew. I almost feel like picking up the phone and calling the Navy and saying, let us help.
Yeah.
You know, I've been
there.
Talk
to the people.
I can help you formulate a plan to deal with this and the families that are wondering what's going on with their loved ones.
Yeah, and it's extreme because I can imagine if I was a sailor and I expected a 6-month deployment, we got into another month, would I, not to higher ups, but in the ranks, would I complain about it? I'd probably, knowing my personality, I'd be like, this sucks. I'd do my job, but, you're at the job. You're complaining, like, I said that we're going to get back for that trip to whatever, you know. But they'd be but these people are not just griping.
Yeah.
They're jumping off an aircraft. They're committing suicide. I just say the tough word here. But
it's unusual. And, I'm going to clean this up a little bit. We have a phrase that a complaining sailor is a happy sailor. You expect.
Okay, so I'd be normal if
gripes.
I was great. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's throughout the military. But this is unusual when you see so many incidents of sailors throwing themselves overboard. That's not normal behavior, obviously.
Yeah, it's not griping. That's something extreme.
You hear about the suicide threats and attempts. I suspect the Navy is having to deal with a lot of family members that are hearing this and expressing legitimate concern. What's going on? Why is my loved one expressing such concern and disdain and saying they're being mistreated and the food is bad and things like that? That's the reports, at least in the media, and you take it with a little grain of salt, but that's unusual. And it does concern me that what's going on here?
Do you think you talk about generationally? Because, we're talking about the same U.S. Navy, talking about the same aircraft carrier, but different people in those roles now. Is it that? Is it the nature? You and I talked during the news break. Is it the nature of the I don't know about this conflict that you don't sit idly? I know nobody's idle on that carrier, but that is, it goes kinetic, and then it stops, and it's not, and then at some point undetermined, it's kinetic again, and then...
Yeah, that's got to weigh on their minds. Uncertainty is always tough mentally when you're in a combat zone like they are.
Yeah.
And the technology, as I mentioned, has changed drastically. My first deployment, we were on constant alert. It was for a different threat. It was for floating mines, bog hammer boats loaded with explosives on suicide missions and things like that. But gosh, I remember being at what the Navy calls general quarters, its highest state of readiness, where we're going through the strait and you're in a lot of tension for sometimes 24 hours straight. Well, that gets to anybody, and perhaps a younger person that's not used to dealing with situations like that, I can see how it's unnerving and it gets to them. Look, I'm no bleeding heart by any means at all, and I'm a 30-year military veteran, Army and Navy, been in 5 combat zones, and I say you're expected to suck it up and, as we say, embrace the suck in the military. But there's a part of me that says, has some empathy, saying something's going on here that might be out of the ordinary.
You know what's interesting? So Billy D had texted here. I'm going to read all these texts. But Billy said, do you know what's caused all this, man? Everybody knows what's caused all it. It's a little black thing you're holding in your hand. That social media thing you're holding didn't used to exist.
Yeah.
And that would exist. Everybody's dependent on it. They get feedback, and then they get feedback, and then it goes into a horrible loop. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned the generational thing. I do think that plays into it. Young people today, and I have 2 young adult kids, one 26 and 24, and they react differently. Mm-hmm. I have to deal with them differently than I dealt with people when I was that age. I do think the over-reliance on social media has damaged our ability to deal with other human beings. I think we might be seeing some of that. We used to say on an aircraft carrier, the average age on the flight deck was about 19.
Really?
Yeah. You think about that. Probably the most dangerous environment.
The people we see on the floating tarmac there, the people that are waving in.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is today, but you got a lot of young kids up on the flight deck involved in constant flight operations. And then you throw in the threat.
19. I was 25, 19.
Oh, yeah. I was an old guy. When I was on the carrier, I was in my late 20s, and I was like an old guy.
Log of the tooth at 20.
As an officer.
20. Wow.
And, yeah, I had sailors that were right out of high school that were working for me and just great Americans. That ain't easy, though. And with the tensions now and the generational changes, and I think especially what a lot of those kids went through with COVID, perhaps it has affected their social skills and their ability to deal with tension and other human beings even.
It seems like I know that the gears of the federal government move slowly.
Yeah.
But it seems like what you're talking about is getting people in there to talk to these sailors. Now, maybe we could move that gear a little faster, go into the next,
Yeah, here's an offer.
Yeah.
I'll help any way I can, and Vets Recover could help.
And I can imagine you with the Admiral and served on it and showing up and saying, all right, guys, I'll be talking I stand back when all you vets talk, I go, y'all speak your own language, and I listen to y'all as you stand back. Just with that language, go in and talk to these sailors.
Yeah, and that's another, we didn't talk about this, Sean, but another interesting little factoid. The USS Abraham Lincoln, right after that deployment, was the first Navy combat ship to integrate women on board. That
really
caused tensions.
Yeah.
But we got through that, and I did not see any heartbreak, any mental health issues with that. And that was a tough transition, especially for the young women.
That's what I'm
going to
say.
Board.
Forget about the dudes.
Yeah, I just didn't see it back then. And I'm wondering, is it a generational thing that's changed? The inability to deal with uncomfortable, unusual situations.
The Navy that you know, will they study this?
Oh, God, I hope so. The Defense Health Agency, which runs medical services in the military, it's very much a joint operation now, hopefully is looking into this and jumping on this. I would hope they have some tiger teams, as we call it in the Navy, that are going out to the Abraham Lincoln.
Is that what is a tiger team?
Tiger team is you put together a temporary team of experts to deal with a situation or a contingency short term. And I would hope it's a Navy term. I hope that they're doing that they've sent people out to the ship to find out what's going on here. How can we help?
Coming right back, a lot to think about on that one. Coming right back, more with Admiral Kent Davis, CEO of Vets Recover, right here on Midday Mobile.
It's the final week to enter the free FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge presented by Spring Hill Ace Hardware. Pick 10 games weekly for a shot at the big Spring Hill Ace grand prize. Sign up now at fmtalk1065.com/pick'em.
For WKRG News 5, I'm Devin Walsh. Construction along Dauphin Street is moving along as planned and should wrap up by the end of next year. 6 months into the project, the focus is on the east side of I-65 to Sage Avenue. Work is expected to move to the west side of the interstate next year. The University of Alabama has launched a new electric fleet. UA unveiled buses this week and said the vehicles will not only be for moving students around, but the buses will also collect data for federally funded research on battery performance, energy use, and power grid technology. The idea is to gather info in real-world conditions to expand efficiency in electric vehicles. The Mobile County Health Department is moving one of its 5 prevention and wellness kiosks to Dilma's Corner. The kiosk will be moved from Spring Hill Avenue to Vista Medical location on Rangeline Road. Another kiosk that was located at Bebob's in downtown Mobile is expected to be moved later this year. Devin Walsh, WKRG News 5.
When ordinary people champion with God, extraordinary things happen. Hi, Larry Skoda, owner of L&S Air Conditioning. For 46 years, we've been proudly serving our community with trusted heating and cooling solutions. As a factory-authorized Bryant dealer, we believe in doing the job right the first time. Like our Bryant motto, whatever it takes. And remember, no air conditioning should ever cost $28,000. L&S Air, 865-5174, license number 83104. And remember, keep Christ in your life.
Are you concerned about cyber attacks at your business, ransomware, network security? If you aren't, you should be. Almost half of all cyber attacks target small businesses like yours, causing many to close or to suffer a financial setback. Be sure your company's network and computers are secure. Ascension Technologies is a local Mobile company who works as your IT advocate with honest, straightforward help. Give them a call today at 243-4224. That's 243-4224 for Ascension Technologies.
Advertising. It's how you encourage people to buy your products, services, or ideas. Imagine being handed a microphone to speak in front of a stadium of 30,000 people. What would you say about your business? FM Talk 106.5 can put you in front of that audience. This is Celeste Holland. Together, we can create an effective advertising campaign. Our listeners are eager for information, trust our station, and prefer to patronize local businesses like yours. Call me at 445-7249, and let's talk about how FM Talk 106.5 can help increase your business.
Hey, this is Tony Truitt with Truitt News Radio. Check out our show every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. right here on FM Talk 106.5. It's all positive and no politics every single week. That's Truitt News Radio, Sunday mornings at 8, where the show that brags on everybody. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 123 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. 251-343-0106. Get you through on a call or a text. And this segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Jeff Stone at Stone Arms, Navy veteran himself. He was on with me yesterday kind of explaining this. But so you know, the landscape has changed here. And if you're looking for a silencer, suppressor, can, he says silencer, I say suppressor. Listen, those things. Same day silencer sales right now started yesterday. Before you show up, though, go to Gun Owners of America, GOA members. You show proof of membership. If you go back and listen to the podcast from yesterday, we explained why. It gives you standing in this. And here she said, you got to be an Alabama resident with a valid and current ID. Got to be 21. You got to complete and pass the 4473 form. Same one we do if we're buying a firearm. It's the 4473. He says a valid pistol permit will not suffice for now. And so get that done. Go get your GOA membership. It's real easy. Get that done before you show up. And, yeah, I mean, it is go in, check out the suppressor you want. And also, they can mount that. Somebody was asking yesterday, do they thread barrels? They put everything together right there. So that's going on at Stone Arms. More information on their website, StoneArmsIncInc.com or Stone Arms Inc. on Facebook. You got through the 3rd, yeah, so you've got through, that'll be Thursday, the 3rd, before they're going to be closed. They had before this came out, they had a pre-planned closure, and they'll start right back September 8th. But you got it this week. I know the pictures are coming in, folks that went in, got it done, and walked out with that suppressor same day. So check out their website, check out the details, and then see them in person. Stone Arms are just about a quarter mile west of Snow on Airport Boulevard. All right, continue our conversation with Admiral Kent Davis, CEO of Vets Recover. This text here said, unnamed texter said, the issue with the Abraham Lincoln is not just the length of deployment, but the longest deployment without a single port of call that usually happens every 4 to 6 weeks.
Actually, that is a very good point that they make. So it's not just the length of the deployment. Sailors do expect, they need a mental break, and port visits are a big part of
it. I mean, y'all get the jokes about sailors coming to town. So
yeah. Now, the longest I ever did at sea was 110 days continuous without a port visit. And I tell you, that was tough. It's almost 4 months at sea without seeing land and just getting off the ship where your whole world is just a few hundred feet long. So I'm sure that's adding to the tension. Yeah, they've had an incredibly long period at sea without a port visit.
Talk to us about what that would be from your perspective as a warfighter. You're there, it's gone kinetic again. We're hitting islands and this and that. What would that feel like? Is it, okay, good, we're getting on with something, or is it, what's like, what would that feeling elicit? That we're, you know, I know Air Force involved today too, but I'm sure a bunch of naval assets involved in, in the missiles going out.
Yeah, I suspect a lot of the Navy ships are at general quarters again. That's the highest state of readiness, and that just, you go to general quarters, it's an instant level of tension when there's bombing going on, any kind of war fighting going on. So that just raises the blood pressure of everybody on those ships, the Air Force personnel that are flying the missions. Yeah, that's not kid stuff. Your life is on the line, because even though we've got the best military in the world, there are some capabilities out there. You take a risk anytime you engage in combat operations, and the Iranians still have some capabilities that we have to be worried about. It causes tension. I also suspect that the on-again, off-again nature is probably weighing on people's minds. It's not good for the economy. I've talked about this before. The markets hate uncertainty.
Oil prices are climbing up all day long today.
I can't even keep track of oil prices. They were up and down. And
Brent crude now at 94.05, and WTI, so West Texas Intermediate, about to make $90 a barrel.
Yeah, and look, I also worry about long-term commitments. We've now been going at this for several months, and there again, it's off again, on again. We don't know what the end result seemingly is going to be. I deployed to Afghanistan, got mobilized for 9 months for Afghanistan, and how many years did we spend in Afghanistan?
20 years.
20. Spent $2.6 trillion over there, and look at the result. And a lot of people, a lot of veterans, Vietnam veterans, sometimes say, you know, look what happened with the fall of Saigon. Mm-hmm. That was demoralizing. We Afghanistan veterans look at the fall of Kabul and the Taliban taking over and sometimes say, well, what the heck?
Yeah.
We spent 20 years, $2.6 trillion. Some of my buddies got killed in that conflict. I worry about this conflict dragging on without a seeming end and an end state.
Right.
It seems to change sometimes.
Right. Where's the finish line? I don't know that, but I don't know where we say, okay, we've accomplished the mission.
Yeah. Is it destruction of the nuclear program? Maybe. Don't really know.
Right. Or is it a regime change?
Yeah, don't really know at times. I think we need clarity on what is the end state here? What do we expect out of this? And I would hope it comes down to rational decisions and not politics.
Right. And those rational decisions have to come from commanders in the theater, I would think. Say, here's the reality of what's going on right now.
Well,
and send that back, come to Washington.
Like, yeah, I'm all in 100% in favor of civilian control in the end.
Right, but
you've got to take the expertise from those military commanders at the tip of the spear. And they're assessing the situation. And, of course, it goes up through the chain through U.S. Central Command. Ultimately, the civilian leadership has to make the decisions, but you would hope that they would make it based on the expertise they're getting from the commanders in the theater.
Do conversations like this ever happen where you go, here's civilian, civilian leadership, here's commander-in-chief, does it ever go back down the line and say, can you do this thing with this equipment? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Can you do, and is there any reluctancy from the people in theater to say, no, I can't?
Yeah, they need to sometimes.
Okay. They can say, no, I can't.
Yeah, let me try to simplify this. One thing we've learned over the last few decades, and this may sound strange to people, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, they don't fight our wars. They supply troops and assets to the unified commands that fight the wars. So the war, even this conflict of Iran, is being fought by U.S. Central Command because they're responsible for that. They go out to the military services and say, we need to perform this mission. Do you have the assets that you can give to us at U.S. Central Command to achieve that objective?
Coming right back, more with Admiral Ken Davis right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And always great to talk to CEO at Vets Recover, Admiral Kent Davis. You think you know a man. You think you know a man. I've been talking with the man for a long time, not just here on the show, but personally. And things came up during the break. You're the person that fired Hunter Biden from the Navy?
Hunter Biden was one of my sailors. People don't know this story much. I actually wrote an article in the Washington
Examiner. You've got to be kidding me. It was...
No, a lot of people
ladies
don't
and
even
gentlemen,
know
he's right here at our studios.
Was in the Navy. He was one of my sailors. He was a reserve public affairs officer. I was the vice chief of information, vice chief of public affairs for the Navy. And it was quite an experience. It happened while President Biden was then the vice president
right.
in the Obama administration.
So you're in a situation where you're about to fire the vice president's son.
Yeah. I was warned.
Holy crap.
Listen, it's the story of my life, having to make tough choices to do the right ethical, moral thing and risking personal retribution for
Jeez
it.
Jeez Louise.
I've come to learn the hard way. But yeah, if you want to hear the story,
yes,
I can give you the Reader's Digest version, as we say.
Yes, I do.
I had just come back from deployment to Afghanistan. I had just made admiral. I'd gone from Navy captain to Rear Admiral. And there's three ways that you can get a commission in the Navy. You go to the Naval Academy, go to ROTC. Actually, there's four ways. You can go to Officer Candidate School, which are the normal ways. But in select communities, you can apply for a direct commission. Okay. And there's a board that meets. Well, one of the communities is public affairs. Others are doctors, lawyers, and
okay,
things like that.
Okay, I got you. If you're going into JAG.
Yeah,
or
specialty.
Like
but public affairs gives direct commissions to a very small select group of people. Usually, you've been prior enlisted, or you have a background in journalism, public relations, something like that. Well, I get back from Afghanistan, and I'm informed, hey, you have, I think, three new sailors that have been given direct commissions. And they went through their backgrounds. I said, wow, very impressive. And they said, well, there's one more. His name is Hunter Biden. Are you familiar with him? And I said, no, but I assume that name is related to the vice president. Well, it's the vice president's son.
Jeez.
And the facts got a little unusual. I said, I guess he's a young guy. Well, no, he's in his early 40s. And I said, we're going to give a commission to a guy in his early 40s? I didn't think we commissioned anybody
right.
above 40. Well, he got an age waiver, and he got some other waivers that for privacy purposes I won't go into.
Mm-hmm.
But no real background in public affairs. Pretty obvious.
Holy cow.
What was going on. Well, I protested.
So he doesn't have the skill set. He's over the age of commission. But here you go. Here's our candidate.
Yeah, and look, I wrote an article about this. If you want to find it, go out. Washington Examiner.
I'm reading this.
I asked them to hold it off until the day that President Trump was inaugurated because, frankly, I didn't want the Biden administration to come after me.
I bet.
So I told the story about my discomfort about him getting the original commission. I think it was unethical. And this is not private. I said, listen, this is not going to end well. I'm just predicting this. And it did not end well.
No.
He showed up for his first drill weekend. Pop positive for drug use.
Right
this
off
is
the
public
bat.
Information. He admitted to all of this, so I'm not violating any privacy. Well, for an officer, well, for anybody in the Navy now, you pop positive on a urinalysis test, you're processed out. So
this
I had
day,
to make
this
the
day, this first. I mean, he just showed
first
up.
Drill weekend. He was a reservist, showed up, and I get the call from his commanding officer. Won't give his name, who happened to be from Mobile, Alabama, and he said, Admiral, are you sitting down? And he told me what had happened. I said, I told everybody this was not going to end well. Nobody would listen. And so we went through months very confidentially dealing with this, and he went through the legal process and was kicked out of the Navy. And I was the first flag officer in the chain of command, so a lot of it fell on my shoulders, the decisions, and I said my plain language direction to everybody was we will treat this 100% confidential, and secondly, I don't care who his dad is, he'll be treated just like any other ensign, period. No better, no worse, and I will suffer the consequences for that.
There had to be people in your ear going, you can't do this. You know,
the running joke was if you end up dead in a ditch, we won't know why. But we went through the process and we kept it confidential, and it had been confidential. He got processed out of the Navy. I spoke to him one time when he got into the community the first time and had a pleasant conversation with him, but didn't really talk to him after that. We went through the process, and when he was out, had been out for months, we kept it completely confidential, and only a small handful of people knew the whole scenario. Somehow the Wall Street Journal got someone, apparently in the White House, I was told. I never found out who did it, but someone leaked the information, and then it went viral for about 48 hours. And I just said, we don't comment on personnel matters. To his credit, and I mean this, and look, obviously in the job I knew I do now, I have great sympathy and empathy for people who have addiction problems. He talked about his addiction. He expressed remorse. He said, I'm ashamed. Yes, I don't know what else to say.
That part doesn't bother me as much. The end doesn't bother me as much as the beginning.
That's exactly what I wrote in the Washington Examiner, that nobody paid attention when I said, this is not right. And what really disturbed me was
this is
some deserving individual who for a long time had strived to get a direct commission into the Navy was deprived of that, probably because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended poorly. And I have no idea who that person may have been, but I think about that person who was deprived of that direct commission in the Navy because probably of politics. And I get so darn tired of politics entering into decisions, especially when it comes to military issues.
Well, we talk about nepotism and all kind of stuff, but we're dealing with the United States military and the Navy, and it's not even like telling people the answers to the test beforehand. It's no, this guy, you're going to give this guy commission.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a second, he's over 40.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second, he doesn't check off these. Yeah, you're going to give him a commission.
You've given several waivers.
That's rotten.
It was very fishy, and I voiced my opinion at the time and was basically told, you better shut up.
Well, wow.
As you
the
know
stone's
from my
on
history,
you, Admiral.
I don't like to shut up sometimes when I think
that's a hard decision.
An injustice. I know that sounds
never
perhaps
that.
A little corny, but
no,
that's
it
my
doesn't.
Philosophy.
Well, it's how you've been since
care.
I met you.
Yeah, I don't. Sometimes I even think, well, I can't worry about the personal repercussions. I got to do what's right.
In the years I've known you, I'd never.
I'll send you the article that I wrote that explains it all.
I started the Google search right here while we were talking.
Yeah, so it would have been Inauguration Day. It was January 20th of 2025. If you look for the Washington Examiner article there, it explains the whole scenario.
You know, it's important for people like you to tell those stories because a lot of times people just say, well, that's all, everything's crooked, Sean. And I go, okay, well, tell me how, right? It's easy to just say, what do the kids say today? You brought the receipts on this. This is how, I always wonder when people say a thing happens, I go, okay, how does it work? Where's the hustle? This audience will know. I go, how's the hustle work? Because I want to know.
I have so many stories like that and many more in federal and state government. Most people wouldn't believe. One day I'm going to write a book about all of this, but I'm afraid people wouldn't believe the things that I've seen.
Well, that one left me slack-jawed. I mean, okay, well, let's bring it to today. You know, when you and I first met was over the exercise of supreme executive authority that the governor used to take the person that the veterans wanted to be over Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs and get rid of him because of a personal grievance, the way I see it. I know you can only say so many things. This is me. I'm the editorialist. Personal grievance for the governor. I mean, you had to file an ethics. I don't know how much of this we can talk about, but you had to file an ethics complaint because that was the rule. If this happens, this happens. Even without malice, you had to do that, right?
That's
what can you say?
In the federal complaint, I've been open about this, and many people have supported this, that I was approached by three people in the State Board of Veterans Affairs with what they characterize as ethics concerns. I sought legal counsel, and I was told, if you don't turn it over to the Ethics Commission and let them look at it, you are guilty of a misdemeanor crime. You could be prosecuted for failure to report it. I'd been through that before. I had been a city manager in Anniston, Alabama, and a city council member committed something that was pretty clearly over the line, and the city attorney came to me and said, you know you're obligated to report that. If you don't, you could go to jail, literally, for failure to report. I reported it. It got investigated. He was prosecuted and convicted. So I'd been down that road before, and with this one, I said, I ain't risking it again. Mm-hmm. I got to do the right thing, and I know it's going to cause perhaps some personal repercussions. But I even put that rules in the ethics complaint.
But the state, you didn't come up with this idea. These are the rules set up in the state of Alabama that if X happens and Y happens, then you go to Z.
Black and white letter law in the ethics code of Alabama. And even the ethics commissioner, who's been in the news, wrote me a letter that said, thank you for understanding your obligation to report this. His words, not mine. And I paid a hefty price. I think everybody knows what happened after that.
I don't know. I mean, but once again, this is, I think there's people know what happened before or afterwards, but maybe not beforehand. We're coming right back. You can stay with us for a few more minutes.
Absolutely.
All right. CEO of Vets Recover. We will mention more about Vets Recover when we return. Admiral Kent Davis, our guest.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and always good to have Admiral Kent Davis, who is CEO of Vets Recover in studio. I'm still over here slack-jawed with the, the Hunter Biden story. I'm like, in the years I've known you, I didn't ever...
I have many more surprises like that.
Unbelievable. And should have done this at the beginning, but let's do this now, too. Talk about what's going on with Vets Recover.
Yeah, so we remain committed to our mission of helping veterans, first responders, and their families. We're a recovery center. We specialize in addiction recovery, but we're there to help veterans with just about anything. Anybody who shows up on our doorstep, we will get to the right place. We will help. We are really, in many ways, a crisis center for veterans, first responders, and their families, because we will get them where they need to go. If it's not us, but a lot of times it is our services that we offer. And we remain committed to that mission, and everybody that works here, salt of the earth people, are committed to that. You don't come to Vets Recover as a small nonprofit to get rich. You come there because you want to help your brothers and sisters, and I mean that sincerely. And if anybody knows of a veteran, first responder, or their family member who they feel might be having some kind of crisis, you contact us, and we will help them immediately. And we'll if we can help them, we will do it immediately. If we need to get them somewhere else, we'll make sure we never turn anybody away.
You mentioned something there. I want to come back to it because I had to go through this in my world as being able to ask my friends and family tough questions.
Yeah.
You know, people who served. And it was always like, I'm uncomfortable. I love, they say, you love these people? Yes. Well, I'm uncomfortable, you know.
Yeah.
You put it on the veterans themselves, but their families. If something's going on, you better reach out.
Reach out or call 988, the national crisis line. And listen, a couple of things coming up connected with that. Let us not forget September 11th is quickly coming up. That is right. The 25th anniversary of one of the most horrendous days in American history. And I suspect there will be some lingering mental health issues when people on that day start thinking about what happened 25 years ago. So let us know if we can help with that. And I hope everybody takes a moment to pause on that date and think about how it affected this country and a lot of lives. We lost almost 3,000 fellow Americans on that day, and then led to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're participating in an event on October 10th at Vets to Cowboys in Grand Bay.
Jeremy was in here this morning.
Yeah, Jeremy, great guy.
Yeah, I was talking to him this morning.
We're doing a ruck and ride event to raise awareness of veteran suicides on October 10th. If anybody wants to participate in that, you can find information all over the internet through Operation Iron Ruck, Vets to Cowboys, Vets Recover. We invite people to come out to that and help with that serious issue. We still have a huge problem with veteran suicides.
And the numbers we've talked about in the past, but the official numbers they come out are daunting, but I've talked to too many of y'all that said that's even
low. Nobody knows the real number. I hear everything from 17 a day to 40 a day in this country.
Y'all think about that. Because it was always like 23 a day or whatever, and then I was told by folks that number's probably low. And then, but I said, even at 23 a day, do the math.
Oh, let me give you a stat that brings it all home. So we were just talking about 9/11. So 25 years ago, we lost 3,000 people on 9/11. We've lost about 7,000 in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. So about 10,000 global war on terror deaths. A conservative estimate in the last 25 years since 9/11, a conservative estimate, we've lost over 200,000.
Y'all think about that.
Veterans to suicide. Think about that. This weekend, when we have our first college football games, that's Bryant-Denny Stadium and Jordan-Hare Stadium combined, the number of veterans that we have lost. And a lot of those deaths we could have prevented with proper intervention. We're part of that solution at Vets Recover, but we are just a drop in the bucket nationally.
But somebody has to say something. Yes. That, I mean, that's the message I've learned as a civilian, you know, that we got to say something.
You don't solve a problem unless you acknowledge first you got a problem and then say we're going to take some steps to overcome it. It's a real problem in this country still.
Y'all think about that stat once again, for because I would say as our losses of our men and women for GWAT, not just 7,000 or 8,000, but like you said, I attribute those 200,000 to GWAT as well.
Oh, I think so. A lot of them. We still see high incidents among Vietnam veterans, even, very sadly. The wounds of war last a long time, and those invisible wounds last a long time sometimes.
You know, one thing, and Admiral can say it, but I know from being around what Vets Recover has done. If you're a veteran and you're listening to them, you're going to go there, you're going to talk to other veterans. I watch these men and women. Y'all talk your own language. You've been there. You have folks that have served, also folks that have fought addiction.
Absolutely.
It's not clinical. It's people that go, okay, I get it. I was, because I know even talking in the past about this, that people can call in and say this issue, and there's somebody there probably goes, okay, I was there. Here, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough for someone to reach out and ask for help. We try to break down those barriers by saying, look, we have all the traditional clinicians to talk to you, but we also have a strong team of peer support specialists who have walked in your shoes. Come talk to us.
And can tell you what worked.
Absolutely.
That's the thing that I, from the outside looking in, is like, we got the way to get through this.
Yes. Yeah. And it's very effective. We break down those barriers almost immediately and get those veterans and first responders and their family members to reach out and seek treatment and help, and they get cooperation along the way.
Okay. So, and we'll post up, I think we've already posted up for the Ruck and Ride for Jeremy, but we'll continue to post that up. And that's happening. And then y'all, you know, also on fun stuff, you're at a golf tournament coming up and all kind of stuff.
We do. November 4th, we have a golf tournament. Again, we don't turn anybody away. We provide a lot of uncompensated care at
y'all Vets been doing Recover that for a long time.
We do. It ain't cheap.
No.
And to do that, we have to do fundraising. We get grants and donations. So a big fundraiser November 4th right here at Magnolia Grove in the Mobile area. We'd love to have you come out and participate for a very good cause, helping veterans with the issues that I just talked about.
Okay. And on the other subject, I know we have a minute and a half left here. I always end up running out of time with you. We talked about the story that's over at Lanyap. Your suit with IV, it's 332, I don't know how many days now. I mean, unprecedented days since you've heard of anything back from their side.
Nothing.
On the suit?
No, just being patient. My attorney, I think, gave a very astute observation that, you know, the judge is very busy. It's a new judge that was reassigned the case. I think that was just mere coincidence. The case was originally assigned to, I think, the senior judge in the Middle District of Alabama. New judge came in, and the case got reassigned, so that kind of restarted the clock. So we're just waiting patiently.
Wait, was the old justice delayed? Is justice denied?
You're not the first to say that, but yeah,
I'm full of cliches.
Yeah, I'm still an attorney. I know you got to be patient sometimes. We're just waiting very patiently.
He's also CEO at Vets Recover, Admiral Kent Davis. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sean.
Paul Feinbach Show on the way next.